Skitters.
Hi, like Ann said, I'm Ellie Haggerty, and I will be presenting on the HIV-AIDS Partnership Project and discussing the comprehensive prevention model we used at two college campuses in South Texas. And I have Dr. Monica Faulkner here with me today from the Child and Family Research Institute at UT. She was our evaluator, and she'll be discussing the evaluation results. So I want to start with just a brief overview of why HIV prevention is relevant with this population. This graph shows that Latinos only represent 16% of the U.S. population, yet 21% of the new HIV infections in 2010. In addition to the disproportionate burden that Latinos have with HIV, young adults, college age, age 20 to 24, are also the age group with the highest number and rate of HIV infection among any age group. And young adulthood is a crucial window for risk-taking and developing health-seeking behaviors, so that's why we focused on college-age populations with HIV prevention. So a little bit about our project. It was funded by the Office of Minority Health in fall of 2010, and it was a three-year demonstration project that just ended at the end of August of this year. I worked with CARDIA, and we were the grantee, and we partnered with the University of Texas Brownsville and Texas A&M Kingsville, which are located in Brownsville and Kingsville. And in each of those locations, we also partnered with a community testing partner, Valley AIDS Council in Brownsville, and Coastal Bend Wellness Foundation in Kingsville, and with UT and the Child and Family Research Institute to conduct our evaluation. So a little bit more about the comprehensive planning model we used. We sought to affect change at the individual, community, and systems level through these four avenues. In capacity building, we worked with the campuses to develop a peer education program, or if they already had an existing program, we worked to recruit sexual health educators and train them in HIV prevention specifically. We also trained staff on risk reduction counseling and HIV testing. And established a testing partner, which was Valley AIDS Council and Coastal Bend Wellness Foundation, so that they created new partnerships and linkages to care for students who tested positive or needed referrals. So that brings us to the counseling and testing portion of the project. We offered both on-campus and off-campus testing, and through focus groups, we found that students had a lot of different preconceptions about confidentiality testing on campus, and they preferred to test off campus. At the same time, there were other students that felt like a lot more comfortable testing at student health services, so we felt like it was really important to offer both the on-campus and off-campus testing. Our community testing partners also came on campus to offer testing once a week regularly. So if they wanted to test in the convenience of being on campus but with an off-site agency, they had that option as well. We also established linkages to care and a referral network for any students that did test positive. Peer education and outreach was a major section of this project. The peer educators did group education sessions with pre-existing organizations around campus, so they partnered with a lot of academic departments to do hour-long sessions during academic courses. They also partnered with other student groups, including sororities and fraternities, athletic teams, LGBT groups, just different campus groups, including the radio and television group. And when we get to tabling events, that was a key partnership was between the peer education program and all of the other student groups to attend those events as well. With the retreats, we had gender-specific retreats, which are Women for Women and It's on Me for Men, and those are day-long, 6 to 8 hour, more comprehensive, in-depth education sessions with groups of 30 to 70 females. The male groups were smaller, and that focused on talking about culture a lot more and how that impacts health behavior, as well as more knowledge, attitude, and skill building than you're able to do in an hour-long session. The third event under peer education and outreach was campus-wide events. So for days like World AIDS Day, National HIV AIDS Testing Day, like National Women and Girls HIV Day. The peer education group held campus-wide events where they had booths and games and HIV testing available on-site in a public space like the Quad. Lastly is tabling, which I mentioned earlier, where they partnered with other student groups to have a presence and create awareness about HIV, as well as normalize the conversation around sexuality on their campuses. We found that that was a very important aspect of the project, was to create the open dialogue around sexuality. Most students had very little previous sexuality education. These campuses were, the majority were Latino students that came from conservative families where sex was not talked about at all. So there was a lot of shame and stigma associated with discussing sexuality. So having a booth where other students are passing out condoms or having conversations around sexuality was a key program activity and really important in changing the community level attitudes and norms related to sexuality, which are so important to HIV prevention. Lastly, we sought to affect changes on the community and systems level through creating a supportive campus environment. We worked with each campus to revise their HIV policy, and many of them had not been revised since they were developed in the 80s, so there was a lot of room to make improvements. We also created condom distribution points that are still in effect even though the project ended, where students could go and get condoms at any time, day or night. Are there any questions about the planning model? Okay. I'm going to have Monica help discuss the changes that we specifically looked for at the individual community and systems level.
Okay. So I did the evaluation for this, and this kind of outlines what our goals and expected outcomes were for each part. I'm just going to talk today about the individual level evaluation that we did. So on that individual level, we were looking for increases in knowledge about HIV, improved attitudes about condom use, increased safer sex behaviors, and obviously we couldn't measure whether or not that actually happened, but whether or not their intent was to have safer sex, increased awareness about HIV testing services. And we did that through pre- and post-tests of the youth who attended those peer education sessions. On a community level, we wanted to see that there was increased access to condoms and HIV and decreased stigma associated with HIV services. So we did do focus groups at the campuses, and we also did surveys of the peer educators. And the focus groups we have in another presentation later, they were very interesting. And then on the systems level, we were just looking to see, did we get that comprehensive HIV policy change? Did it actually happen? And that was a whole interesting process, but eventually it kind of sort of did happen. So I'm going to just talk about those individual level outcomes. Our research questions were, is there a significant improvement in HIV-related knowledge? Is there an improvement in attitudes towards safer sex? And is there a significant decrease in perceived barriers to condom use? So how we looked at this was the peer education sessions, when those occurred, and they, like Ellie said, there were different types of peer education sessions. There were those quick interactions at health fairs. There were those longer retreats, and then just those hour-long presentations that people did. So in order to participate, they had to be enrolled as a student, be 18 or older, fluent in written English, and not under the influence of alcohol and drugs. And all that was self-reported because that's what our funder wanted, so we had to make sure that we at least people seemed to meet those criteria. In terms of recruitment into these peer education sessions, it was a lot of word of mouth, a lot of flyers, a lot of students talking to each other. There wasn't any compensation for participating. However, there were a lot of freebies. You know, at health fairs, students love those little pieces of, you know, I call them junk that my, like, six-year-old collects. But everybody loves that stuff. And so sometimes there were those little freebies. There was also some of the education sessions happened during class, but we made sure that they were not required to fill out our evaluation as part of their class. But professors kind of picked up on the fact that there's this education going on, and hey, I need to miss class to go to a conference, so can y'all come to my class that day? And so a lot of people participated through that. With the pre and post tests, we had students come up with their own unique identifier to match between the pre and post. I didn't create the system. I came in after that was created, and I have to say it didn't work that well. So if you want to know about that, I can talk to you after. It was about a 10-minute long survey for the longest survey that people did. Completion was voluntary. We did obtain written informed consent. The peer educators did that. So the measures that we used, this is what our actual survey ended up looking like, one of the longer ones. We looked at HIV knowledge using the HIV knowledge questionnaire. That's a standardized measure. Knowledge of HIV of services were study developed questions that just said, do you know on campus where you can receive HIV testing? Do you know in the community? Do you know where you can receive behavioral health services? So those were just study developed. The HIV attitudes scale that we used was adapted from a study by Dawson in 1990, and it was adapted for Hispanic college students. And then the attitudes towards condom use, we used, it's actually two subscales that we used from the UCLA Multidimensional Condom Attitude Scale, or the MCAS. We used the pleasure subscale, and then we used the, to measure condom self-efficacy, we used the subscale on negotiation and use for that. And then the analysis is really basic, descriptive statistics, parasimple t-tests, and chi-square, depending on the variables. So these are just some of the demographics, and I have to warn you, this gets really, it's a little bit confusing as a researcher because the ends are very different in the different graphs, and you'll see that as I move forward. That is because if you're just coming into a health fair and talking to people, we couldn't get people to do a pre and post of a long survey, right? So we had a very brief survey for them to fill out. For people who were doing the retreats, which are much smaller numbers, they had the longer 10-minute survey. So you'll see the ends are very different in some cases. But I wanted to show you all of them, so we have them all up here. So in terms of race, ethnicity, these two campuses are Hispanic-serving institutions, and we combine race and ethnicity here. So 88% of the kids who participated were Latino, primarily Mexican-American. The University of Brownsville, literally, when you walk just to the sidewalk, the border is right there. So, I mean, we're right on the border. And Kingsville is just about 2 hours up in Texas. So in terms of race, we had primarily Latinos. Gender, we had a little bit more of females than males because the Women for Women retreat curriculum was developed first. We had more women go through that in the 3 years of the project. In terms of age, this isn't the ideal way to break it down, but this is how we reported it to the feds. So 91% of our students were between 18 and 29. Marital status, obviously they were mostly single, and then sexual orientation, mostly heterosexual. We were talking earlier, it's very interesting that 6% are in that questioning category, and much less identified as gay or lesbian. And again, this is a very conservative community. There's a lot of stigma around that label of gay or lesbian, and so we didn't have a lot of students identifying as that. They were more so questioning. In terms of HIV risk, this is where you see the different ends. So the lower ends are people who participated in those longer retreats. People didn't really feel like they were at risk for HIV or AIDS, or if you look at sexual experiences, they didn't feel like their sexual experiences were putting them at risk. However, if you look at sexual health behaviors, you can see that probably if you're in public health, you would disagree with that, because a lot of students reported 64% had ever had a sexually transmitted disease. It's a really low end because we got a lot of people skipping that question, even on the longer surveys. A lot of unprotected sex, 78%. And we asked about both vaginal and anal sex. And so there's more people reporting unsafe sexual behaviors than there were saying that they were at risk. So there's definitely a gap here and a lot of education that was needed with this population. And in terms of what we got out of it, so a knowledge of services. In general, our results show that people after attending a peer education session or having contact with a peer educator, they did increase their knowledge. They knew where testing services were on campus, in the community, behavioral health, and on the last item, they plan to get tested within the next 6 months, and there were significant increases there. Oh, is that the same slide? No, it's different. So in terms of HIV knowledge, there's a significant increase, and then also condom self-efficacy. We didn't see a significant increase in condom attitudes or attitudes towards HIV. And I think with that scale, and after looking at it a little bit more, we are still dealing with a very conservative community, so there's still more work that had to be done besides that 1 hour session. So there are a lot of limitations to this with the data collection. One is that I was brought in as evaluator a year into the project. So we changed evaluators and we changed measures a little bit. The big thing, though, is the reliance on the peer educators. We had to really be on top of the students doing this to make sure that they understood the importance of us getting a pre and a post test. Because a lot of times what I would get back to me would be a pre-test without a post-test or a post-test without a pre-test, and it was very confusing. So it was constant education there. There were a lot of inconsistencies with the matching of the pre- and post-test because people would forget. It was basically your favorite color, your phone number, and something else. People would forget their favorite color. They often didn't forget their phone number, but it was interesting. So, and then people skipped measures quite often, and so we weren't sure, you know, why they were skipping. There's also a recruitment and selection bias in terms of the peer educators were the ones doing a lot of recruiting, and so if you're a college student, it's easiest to go to your friends first and then branch out from there. So there's definitely some bias there. And the peer educators were obviously students who are pretty good students, they're very dedicated, and so their friends are probably not the most at-risk students on campus. So conclusions. There's definitely evidence to suggest that peer education improved HIV knowledge, helped improve knowledge of where to find services, and it increased the intention to get tested. We don't see, though, that there's significant evidence to show improvement in attitudes or perceived or a decrease in barriers to condom use through this project. And so that's it.